Thank you, Lukeshwara. Thank you. Yes, so I've been asked to set the scene for this series, set the scene for Milarepa's archetypal Kalyana Mitra and Dhyana as the natural human state. So, so there we go. So I'm going to address both these parts of the title, but increasingly as I was reflecting on this talk, it became manifestly clear to me that the scene, as much as I'm interested in the 11th century Tibetan medieval scene, I'm most interested in the contemporary scene. So I'm sort of going to riff off the title mainly to talk about the contemporary scene. And the best way I thought I can do this is simply to sort of present myself or give myself as something of a case example of what a young Dharmachari looks like now, what it's like coming into the order now. So I'll give you just two perspectives on my situation. Firstly, geographical. So yeah, as Lokeshwara said, I'm now at the London Buddhist Centre in East London. It's a very rich scenario in which to be. I feel very much sort of nestled in the bosom of the new society, and I work in the men's team at the LBC. So I'm part of a 10-man team, which is also part of a bigger 18-person team who run the centre. Very obviously, many of you will know the place. It's a real thriving sangha with communities and several businesses, and a very rich context of friendships and Kalyana Mitra. So myself, part of that team, with these 10 men going right up through, as Lokeshwara said, Maitra Bandhu's there, Vidyadhaka's as my manager, Yana Varcha's the boss, Subhuti's the president. So it's a very sort of rich context in which to be working. And of course, besides that, it's modern London. So East London is increasingly central London, and it's a very busy metropolitan place. So the second particular is my historical situation. And this became particularly clear reflecting on this talk. When thinking about Milarepa as archetypal Kalyana Mitra, the thing that preoccupied me more and more was this notion of was Kalyana Mitra as tradition or as lineage. That was the issue that really sort of stood out for me and preoccupied my thinking. So just to say something about that is, so my historical circumstances, yeah, as Lokeshwara said, I've been around for a little while. I asked for ordination in 2009. Yes, that was the year that the What is the Western Buddhist Order came out and the Conversations came out. And it was the following year, 2010, that Bante changed the name to Tri Ratna. So reflecting on this more and more, I realize that for me, it feels very much like I have been ordained into the Tri Ratna Order. And that to some extent, the FWBO is sort of before my time. So although technically I was a Mitra in the FWBO, it's sort of history. History, no doubt, I love and cherish, absolutely. But it does feel before my time. It's funny when I'm I'm talking with my preceptor Sagramati, and we often ramble on till the cows come home. And it's often that I learn a lot about the history of the the past decades through him. It's really special. And often as we're sort of setting up our respective straw dharmacharis with which to prove our superior views and, more importantly, wit. There comes moments when I can't quite recognise Sagramati's straw dharmachari. I'm like, who's this dharmachari? It's partly because you know, our particular formative time coming into the order, training for ordination, is just a different socio-historical context. It's not a profound point. It's just a basic notion that, of course, a lot of the attitudes, the views, are just quite different. And I've realised, I've come to appreciate that as a sort of historical shift. I think this name change has been significant of that for me. Yeah. Yeah, talking about the history, actually, as part of my work at the LBC, I manage a team of volunteers who run reception Monday to Saturday. We've got 30 volunteers who do that for us. And we had Volunteers Day just this last Sunday. And we were watching Surya Prabha's Opening of the Heart, that first piece about the early days. Just an absolutely delightful film. The volunteers were really thrilled. And we noticed that that first centre in Monmouth Street, I didn't know this, maybe some of you probably there, but that was called a Tri Ratna Meditation Centre. I didn't realise that, so we thought that was funny. And delightful watching it with Mangala, who was sitting next to me, and then we could dialogue and talk about that even further. So that's something on my context, my particulars. Yeah, so then thinking further about Milarepa as archetypal Kalyana Mitra, the thing that struck me was, in a sense, considering archetypal in its strict sense of original example or original mode, typical mode, didn't feel to me to be actually such an adequate archetype of a Kalyana Mitra. The reason being is it came across to me very much as a guru archetype, and that's not the way I kind of experienced Kalyana Mitra. I get the impression again that it was quite like that in the early days with Bhante, so central, so in tune, so in touch. But for me coming in now, it's quite a different picture. And, in many respects, I think it's even a more brilliant picture. It's a more wonderful, rich picture. Because I don't have one Kalyana Mitra. I don't have one go-to man. Actually, what I find coming into the order now is I look up through this rich canopy of scores of Kalyana Mitras. I look up through through a whole family of sort of Dharma, big brothers, uncles, grandfathers. It goes really right the way up to, of course, to Sangharakshita, right up as far as I can see. So the picture I see feels much, it's very, very rich, very, very rich, a rich tree. Yeah, and I prefer considering this term Kalyana Mitra, the Kalyana Mitra, more in the sort of abstract, as Kalyana Mitra, as a fruit of the the spiritual life. That's my point there is that it seems to arise much more when Dharmacharis are effectively practicing. Kalyana Mitra comes. I consider it much more a fruit of practice, and much more of a karma phala than a karma per se. Yeah. So, moving on, we often talk about Kalyana Mitra as a spiritual life. We get this from the Upada Sutta about Kalyana Mitra being the Brahmacharya, being the Dharmacharya. And it's clear that this term that the Buddha uses is porous and seems to be deliberately ambiguous, so that he's talking to Ananda But it's perfectly reasonable to render this his notion of Kalyana Mitrata here as communion with the beautiful. So I think it's in this connection, communion with the beautiful, that the link comes with some reflections on dhyana. Because insofar as one is communing with the beautiful, absorption in higher skillful mental states, in higher states of consciousness, to some extent at least, that seems coterminous with dhyana, or at least dhyana and beyond. So I've been reading what Milarepa has to say about dhyana in this passage. And obviously it's delightful, absolutely delightful. And you know, Milarepa's talking about how dhyana is just the beginning, how, you know, don't get stuck in dhyana. But of course, certainly around the LBC, that's not the main problem, is getting stuck in dhyana. I mean, probably, you know, if we were all sitting on the side of a Tibetan valley, it may well be problematic. But obviously, my circumstances are very different, and the people I'm living with is very different. It's more sort of not so much nettle tea, but sort of soy lattes and things like this. So it's a very different circumstances. So although there's obviously connection and lots of inspiration to be drawn, frankly, it's a very different scenario. So what I came to was I found in just reading about dhyana, reading what Bhante's got to say on dhyana, I lighted on an excellent passage from Human Enlightenment, which is a talk Bhante gave I think in New Zealand well over 40 years ago, so just must be relatively early on in the movement, where Bhante talks about dhyana and as higher states of consciousness, the super conscious states of mind, and he expounds different methods of approach. So he talks about direct methods of raising human consciousness and indirect methods, or as he calls them, subjective and objective methods of raising human consciousness, and stressing that this is the goal of the spiritual life. This is what spiritual life consists, the development, the raising of human consciousness. And he's particularly in part of this talk, he stresses how important these indirect methods are, both to have a broad, to not to limit ourselves to a to what elevation, refinement of human consciousness can look like, but also so as to remember what meditation itself really is. He says, you know, remember that meditation exists in the raising of human consciousness. There are many means for this. So what I'll do is just, he makes loads of excellent points, and I'm just going to pick out a few and just make some comments on them for the contemporary situation as I find it. So one of the first ones he says about indirect methods to dhyana is change of environment. Yeah. Now, of course, nature and all that, very, very good. Actually, what I was really struck by is the LBC. Maitra Bandhu described the LBC a few months ago as a cross between a village green and a temple, and it's really apt description of the LBC. And what I notice more and more is people come into teaching newcomers to meditation. They come into the shrine rooms and they just get really arrested by the mood, by the atmosphere, by what a sanctuary it is. People do automatically turn off their phones. You don't even need to remind them. But mostly they just come in. They naturally, deferentially take off their shoes, their phones, go into the shrine rooms, and they go, wow, this is an incredible place. It just really is a sanctuary. And you can see immediately they start their consciousness, their mood is refined. It's absolutely delightful. It is a temple, and it just strikes me more and more how it's so important, that kind of sanctuary in a city like that, It's so important that it's beautiful, that it's loved. Vajrabandhu, our caretaker, takes such good care to keep it beautiful, and it just it immediately has such an effect on people's state of mind. On the media note as well, I'm noticing leading retreats just how big a deal it is now when we go on retreat that we switch off. That is becoming increasingly a big when particularly when newcomers report from a retreat, like part of what was the how strange it was, is switching off is a bigger and bigger deal. Turning off the phone, turning off the computer, internet connections. That's all change of environment. Secondly, well, at least another point Bhante makes is about right livelihood. Living in a supportive working environment as a means to dhyana. And certainly, I find this myself at the LBC. Our men's office is sometimes there's just such a mood, a relaxed mood of productivity, of sensitivity, good humour. It's just an absolutely delightful place to work. But the other point I have is I'd love. There's lots of other young guys around the centre who, they're not really into their work so much, and I'd love them to have opportunities to work in situations like mine. But there's so little. This is a thing that concerns me. I don't know what the answer is to this. Again, in discussing this talk with Vijidaka the other day, I was saying how, you know, the often people think of right livelihood, they think of working in a cafe or working in a gift shop or something. And for me, frankly, the chance would be a fine thing. You know, like I've been, like Lokesh said, I've been at centres in, since I've been a mitra, at centres in Bristol, Edinburgh, Paris and London. I haven't seen a cafe. I haven't seen an evolution shop. So it's not the scenario I see. Certainly around the LBC, if you're a man, the best bet is working for the centre itself. But of course, that's limited. The arts, naturally, and what I've been really noticing recently, is, especially since moving to London, is how much and how important it is to be educated, to be to learn in the arts, to be trained in the arts, much in the same way as we train in Dharma practice. Is there is so much to learn. So, for example, Maitreya Bandhu's making... he's got sort of brought into being this program we have at the LBC called Poetry East, where he brings in poets and interviews them. But what I've noticed in going to these events over the months is it's just such a training. There is something to learn. It's not just a question of having a nice evening out. And this is an important issue because, so you know, even in London, so much of the arts can just simply settle down into lifestyle or sort of arts in italics kind of thing, and it's really important that we wrestle that away and we sort of reclaim the importance of the arts and their relationship with spiritual life. I'm seeing this happening with Poetry East, and I mean, it's not an easy thing to do, of course. You know, it takes. I've only known a few men, frankly, who could guide me in the arts in this way. Maitreya Bandhu's one, Subhuti was another, a professor I had at Edinburgh was another. So it's a very difficult thing. I mean, I'm sure, of course, Bhante did that naturally over the decades with so many people. But what I think is really important to remember is that, as challenging though it is, we really need to find ways to remember that one needs training and education in these spheres as well, to open them up, and that especially for newcomers and people getting more in the centre, that's going to be vital. Another point I came across in this list was helping people. with disinterested action. So I hadn't come across that myself as a means to dhyana. So I found that fascinating. Help disinterested beneficial activity, Bhante called it. So I read this talk a few weeks ago, And I didn't feel like I actually knew what that was, to my shame. Anyway, so earlier this week, I ended up going to a soup kitchen, which I thought would be that kind of thing, you know. It was a Christian outfit. Anyway, it was really, really good. It was up in North London, in Islington, and lo and behold, just this you know, you open up the doors, all these you can imagine it, like all these schools of really crazy characters coming in, and you know, you give them what they ask for, all kinds of just all over the world, you know. Half of them can't speak any English, all kinds of colours, all shapes, absolutely crazy atmosphere. But just you get into this flow of giving, some of them are a bit aggressive, a lot of them are, you know, want to have a bit of banter, which is often intelligible. But anyway, just, yeah, I did find myself getting into just sort of some kind of ecstasy, actually, with just this kind of hubbub of kind of helping. A really, really good outfit. Vidhi Dharka did point out to me that there happened to be a young lady there who I had something of a crush on, so it wasn't completely completely disinterested. But, you know, but sort of mixed motives, you know, carry on, nevertheless. Actually, probably a better one, actually, was a Karunar appeal. My Karunar appeal did... some years ago, staying at Padmakula in Cambridge. Again, the beneficial that was led by being led by Jayaraja. That was the first time I met Jayaraja, and I can remember again weeks into that appeal with going up into the shrine room after we'd sort of tuned in just before about to go out door knocking, and often just breaking down into. Sanganatha would lead us in Milarepa mantra, because Milarepa is his yidam, and often we'd be singing the mantra, and then there'd just be just rapture, just absolute rapture amongst us, amongst our little team, as we go out door knocking. Very, very, very successful appeal. And again, that appeal actually was what led me to ask for ordination. I asked for ordination in the middle of that appeal. And so I think I was experiencing something of what Bhante's talking about then, again, just higher states of consciousness, being around those men and doing something that was actually beneficial. Of course, another point Bhante draws on is Kalyana Mitrata in the personal sense, i.e. just spending time with the spiritually mature. I certainly, this is part of my weekly routine. I couldn't do without this. It was quite funny. We do have a cafe at the London Buddhist Centre. It's not a Buddhist team running it at the moment, but often we just go. So I have lunches there. We have lunch there. And so it's pretty much 5 days a week. I'll have lunch with a friend from the team or around the local Sangha. I think it was earlier this week, there was this funny moment where we were sort of in the courtyard. And there was that classic sort of Tree Ratna scene where there was just tables with two guys, you know, all around the corner. There's a moment when everyone looked up and looked round at each other. And we just burst out laughing. But, you know, I love it. You know, I just love it, because you just spending time with people in that one-on-one way. I mean, I love it. And I do it so much. I guess I do take it somewhat for granted, but absolutely essential, those regular just meetups all the time, on a daily basis. So then finally, the one point that jumped out at me was discipline per se. Bhante makes the point that discipline per se, as a means to dhyana, as a means to cultivating consciousness, and I'm discovering that certainly more and more as I sort of get going with life in the order. It's just a disciplined routine that serves me, so that I can serve the movement better. And that discipline consists, of course, in all these methods, all these ways to raise consciousness, to train to train in the Dharma life. And that's really what it is. It is a whole life, of course. It's a whole culture that I feel like is that I'm very much I'm sort of just stepped into and just reaping the fruits of. That's what I really want to say, is just how rich a culture there is happening now, and that someone like me can just kind of step into a situation like the LBC, for example, and there's just so much happening already. There's so many fruits already to be enjoyed, and ways in which I can train and try and get other people share that abundance and take it further. It's a whole life. Share the life. I love the way Pamavadra recently was just talking about share the Dharmacharya, share the life, live your life and share it. I just find that really, that's just absolutely what I want to do. So yeah, so this is the discipline. This is what I understand by training in this discipline. That is what I understand by being being a disciple in contemporary speak, training in that, in all these practices, all these ways of trying to be, trying to raise consciousness, trying to bring about a more cultural flourishing, trying to be a better man. So that's what I feel like I've been given. When Sagarmati gave me my name, when Sadaloka gave me my kesa, they gave me this life, and that was the deal. And so far it's win-win. Okay, thank you very much.